At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids. You know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Welcome, everyone, to the SI Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thank you for listening. Excellent show this week. Ariel Helwani is the guest. We get into Ariel's career as a MMA reporter. Covers also all combat sports, WWE boxing. We talk about his rise in the MMA journalism world, his issues with Dana White, where MMA stands today, how he does his interviews, how he carved out his career after leaving Fox and ESPN. Really great stuff if you're into the world of sports media and career journeys from Ariel. And then Sal Licata back for Train of Thoughts. When we get into Sal, Sal's in a whole big mess with Braves fans, Met fans. We get into all that with Sal. Give you guys a best bet. I'm 4-0 in those best bets. Hopefully keep it rolling and discuss a couple of other things in the Train of Thoughts segment with Sal. Before we get to it, let me remind you, we've had some great guests over the last several weeks. Brian Curtis from The Ringer was on last week. Rich Eisen from NFL Network 2 weeks ago. Andrew Marchand from The New York Post 3 weeks ago. Al Michaels 4 weeks ago. Matthew Berry 5 weeks ago. If you missed any of those, check out the SI Media Podcast. Subscribe to it. Give those a listen. And if you can leave a review on Apple, we'll read them on an upcoming episode. Okay, let's get into it. Ariel Helwani followed by Train of Thoughts right here on the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, very, very excited to talk to him for the first time here on the SI Media Podcast. Covers everything in the world of MMA, WWE, boxing, really the MMA aficionado when it comes to journalists, Ariel Helwani. Ariel, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. How are you? Pleasure to be on. You've never had me on before. I was kind of feeling like I was being iced out a little bit. You have everyone under the sun on the program multiple times, a couple jabronis here and there, and I never got the call until now, so thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And, I try to be as honest as possible on this podcast. I hate being a phony about anything, so the truth is, I don't follow MMA at all and know nothing about it, which is probably why it took me so long to get you on. But I am fascinated and impressed by your career, and that's why I wanted to have you on, especially in this time now where you really don't need to be at a Fox or an ESPN to carve out a career for yourself. And, you know, in introing you, I didn't even run down where everyone can find you because you have so many things going on. I figured I'd let you do that. So I really wanted to have you on just to talk about navigating your career here and basically how you have become so successful.
I appreciate it. Thank you. No, I listen all the time. I love sports media. Obviously, I grew up idolizing all the same people that, you know, you look up to, you talk about, you talk to. I always find it interesting that hardcore wrestling fans you know, the ones who didn't graduate over to MMA, because I'm a hardcore wrestling fan from back in the day. That's the first thing that I ever grew up loving. And I always find it interesting when I meet people like yourself who don't make that crossover. Not that I'm judging. There's enough things to love out there. But I find that to be fascinating as well. So I talk about whatever.
I like my violence to be fake.
Ah, okay.
I think that, well, you know, it is. I'm curious to know in the MMA world, like, I know with the NHL, for instance, if you say, not you, but the general you, if someone says that they don't follow the NHL or don't watch the NHL, hockey fans get very, very annoyed and aggravated and pissed off.
Yeah.
How are the MMA fans with that? Like, is it bad that I say I don't follow the MMA?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. There used to be this obsession, especially from the UFC brass, that they wanted to be mainstream. They wanted to be accepted and covered. Like the other major sports, Dana White famously has said that, you know, the UFC is going to be bigger than soccer and bigger than the NFL. And it's all ridiculous. It will never be bigger than soccer or the NFL. It's a very niche sport. It's two people fighting in a cage. And there's a lot of people who don't enjoy that sort of thing. So I've never been the type of person who's tried to convert people into fans. You either like it or you don't. I can understand why you don't like it. I understand why you love it as well. And to each his own.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of, I mean, I've talked about this on this podcast. I think because we live in this time now where every sport, every game, match, whatever sport you find, where it's all available to you, I find it harder to keep up with everything. I mean, I've said this before, like I don't even follow or watch college basketball anymore because it's just, it just fell off my menu because it's too much. You know, that season starts when the NFL is going on, the NBA is going on. So it's not even whatever I don't enjoy or don't follow MMA. I don't have time to add any more sports to the roster. I'm fascinated by people who consume everything. It's like, how do you have time to do all that?
No, I agree. I don't watch. I'm a big NBA fan, but I'm a fan of my teams, basically. Like, I love the Buffalo Bills. Right. I'm not sitting and watching, you know, the Chiefs and Niners. I don't do it. I'm a huge Knicks fan. Basketball is the one that I'll kind of cross into other teams and stuff like that. I love the Blue Jays. I'm not watching the Yankees, Red Sox because I don't have time. Like, I'm watching my team and that's it. That's why I don't do fantasy. I don't do any of that stuff. Who the hell has time, especially if you have a family, you have kids, like, and then the job itself. So I totally can relate to that.
Yeah. Let me start. So just take me through just sort of how you got into MMA when you were younger. Did you have other sports that you thought I wanted to cover or tell me how it all came about for you?
So I grew up in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. I grew up a huge, huge sports fan. And I would say I was more of an American sports fan, meaning I wasn't actually a big hockey fan. NBA was always my favorite sport or favorite league growing up. I was a gigantic 90s Knicks fan. Those Patrick Ewing, my favorite athlete of all time, and the 90s Bills were my other favorite team. I was also a big Montreal Expos fan. We did exist. And I loved everything about sports. And I remember being, actually, it's funny that we're talking about this. I remember being in the ninth grade in Montreal class, and I had subscribed as of like, I think 9 years old, I was a subscriber to Sports Illustrated. And I remember being in the ninth grade reading an issue of Sports Illustrated, and we're supposed to be reading something else. And I have like the textbook here, and then I have like my Sports Illustrated, you know, covered by the textbook. And it was an issue where they were ranking the best schools in America for all sorts of things. And there was a little blurb which stated that the best school in America for sports broadcasting was Syracuse University. And so a light went off in my head. I was like, wow, you can actually go to school for this? And then they listed some of the famous alumni, in particular Bob Costas and Marv Albert, two guys who I loved, NBA on NBC, baseball, all that stuff. And so I remember saying to myself, I'm going to go to Syracuse. That's the place for me. And I went to Syracuse. And when I went to Syracuse in 2001, I remember for the first time in my life, I was surrounded by kids who all had the same dream that I had. Like, I was fascinated by TV. I loved watching the broadcasters. I looked up to Marv and Bob more so than the athletes themselves. Like, I remember watching the intros and trying to emulate them, copy them, and see how they handled the tosses and all that. I just loved everything about that. But then when I got to Syracuse, everyone wanted to be that guy. And I've never been someone who likes to follow others. So while I was a traditional sports fan, I was also a massive combat sports fan as well. I loved pro wrestling. I loved boxing. I loved MMA. At the time, UFC was only 8.5 years old. And I remember telling my parents, you know, there's this thing called the UFC. There's this sport called MMA. No one's really covering it. They don't have like a face. They don't have a voice. I want to be the Howard Cosell of MMA. That's what I want to be. And so while everyone's going down that path, I want to go down that path. And so I had my own radio show in Syracuse where I interviewed fighters and talked about the sport. And that's really kind of where it all started for me.
It was a brilliant move. Was it calculated? Because it was a brilliant move to get in on a sport that was just starting out. You know, if your plan was like, well, let me get into the NBA, let me get into the NFL, who knows what you're doing there? You got to go in the middle of the country to sort of work for like, you know, AAA. Was it part of the strategy was let me get in on this new sport because I can be the top dog in it?
Yes, and I loved it. I legit loved it because what I loved about the UFC at the time and still to this day, it had all the elements of pro wrestling, right? It looked like pro wrestling. There were good guys, bad guys. There were characters, Hoist Gracie, Ken Shamrock, Tank Abbott. Like there were legit characters, but it was, you know, it was unscripted. It was unpredictable. And so I loved that element of it. And I really felt as a fan, it wasn't really being covered properly. Like it wasn't, I wasn't being serviced as a fan. And so here I am trying to figure out my career, trying to figure like, why don't I go down this path and see where it takes me? Now I did a show at Syracuse for 3 years and it was like, no one was listening to it. My mom would listen to it online and that was it. And then when I graduated in 04, I actually went to work for HBO Sports and I worked there for a year. And then I kind of went down a path of TV production and it was in 2007 that I decided, all right, I'm going to put all my eggs in this basket. I'm really going to make a run for it because actually, to make a long story short, I went to work at Spike TV, which at the time was the home of the UFC. And so I got this job at Spike thinking like, this is the perfect place for me. I'm working in production, UFC, all this stuff. I lasted a week there before I realized they actually didn't produce anything. The UFC produced everything and would give them the content and they would just put it on the air. So it was a very sort of kind of clerical job that wasn't my thing. I'm a creative guy.
I was gonna say, what were you doing there?
You literally were, I was a coordinator. So I would like coordinate, oh, we get the tapes from here and we put it there. It was so boring. Right. And I remember going to my boss's office after a week and saying, I don't think this job is for me. I'm kind of a crazy passionate guy. And I said, it's time for me to go. Yeah. He was very upset. He said, this was the biggest mistake of my career, all that stuff. And it's in that moment, as they made me sit on the sidelines for a month and a half until they replaced me, I started my own website and I wanted to prove to people that I can interview fighters better than anyone. And so my goal was between October of 2007 and April 1st, 2008, I was going to post an interview with a fighter every morning and try to use that website as a launching pad to get a real job. And luckily it worked.
Unbelievable. That's awesome. That is awesome.
I used to reach out to fighters via MySpace, by the way. That's how long ago this was.
Yeah. I'm going to do something bad here in terms of podcasts. Since we've started this interview, I've had to sneeze. So at some point, I may just let it go and just go keep ahead. Going if
Listen,
I sneeze.
Can I break the fourth wall as well?
Yeah, go
I'm
ahead.
Doing this via my phone. I'm almost embarrassed that I'm doing it this way because we just lost power at our house. I usually have a pretty good setup with a microphone and a TV behind me. So
I appreciate you. I appreciate you doing it while you have no power. That means a lot. And if I sneeze, just keep going.
No problem.
Tell me. So. Did your career, so for as much as people want to shit on ESPN, and I get it, ESPN is still extremely important in the world of all sports. And I would assume that when MMA, UFC ends up making a deal with ESPN, that took the sport to another level. Did that coincide with also taking your career to another level?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there were a couple of moments, right? Like the first moment that was huge for the sport was the Spike TV deal, because for the longest time, you know, it was just a pay-per-view sport. Then it was actually banned from pay-per-view in the late 90s. Then it would, you know, it started to climb back up. It had a little cup of coffee with Fox Sports, Best Damn Sports Show, period. The huge milestone for them was getting on Spike. And then from Spike, they went on Fox, FS1, Fuel TV, all that stuff, and Big Fox. That was huge. And I worked for Fox for 5 years as well. And then in 2018, the UFC deal signed, and that was gigantic, and I was lucky enough to get in there on the ground floor. Now, for me, being a huge sports fan, ESPN was always the end goal. Like I you know, I used to, our family, I didn't get ESPN growing up. I got TSN,
right.
And like I said, I didn't really care about hockey. So when we'd go on vacation, New York, Boston, whatever, I would sit there and watch SportsCenter on a loop. Stuart Scott, Rich Eisen, Dan Patrick, Olbermann. Like, it was just incredible to me to have this channel that covered the sports that I cared about. So yes, so when I got in 2018, I left my job to go to ESPN and get in there on the ground floor to help launch, you know, UFC on ESPN, which for the longest time people thought would never be a reality. It was a massive, massive deal for me. Yeah. And there were highs, there were lows, but you know, I'm sure you'll ask about it. No hard feelings, and I'm very happy. I don't regret the decision to go, and I don't regret the decision to leave as well.
Right. Tell me about, before UFC and yourself were at ESPN, it was you were at Fox, UFC was at Fox. Did it need to go to ESPN though to go to another level, or do you think the popularity? Okay.
Oh, massively. I mean, they always wanted to be on ESPN, and you see what ESPN has done for the UFC, especially in the last couple of years, like just little things. As you know, if an entity, just ask hockey fans, right? If an entity isn't on ESPN, if they don't have a deal with them, they're not going to cover them as much. When they are in business with the sports league, they are all in, right? And so you'll see little things like them being covered on SportsCenter. It's on the bug. It's on the little, the little ad thingy on the thing. It's on .com a lot more. And so they're just putting it into the sort of sports ether, the cycle, to give awareness to the sport. And prior to that, they never did that. So it was huge, and it was fascinating to be there. I got there June of 2018. The deal started 2019, January 1st, 2019. To be a part of those like 6 months to the launch was a huge, huge thing. Yeah. And the sport has grown exponentially because of ESPN, 1,000%. Also, you know, during the early days of the pandemic, it was controversial, but the UFC came back early. And there was a period there of 2-3 months where there was nothing going on. And ESPN was ESPN had nothing to really cover other than like, you know, depressing stuff. And here there's fights every Saturday. Right. And then there's the rise of, you know, sports gambling, all these things together. The UFC has grown so much in the last two years, just because of that whole situation and being at the right place at the right time. So yes, it has gone. I mean, yeah, it's on a rocket ship.
I would imagine UFC, like everything else, benefiting so much from the gambling. That sport, I can see UFC especially. Yeah. Now, you weren't at ESPN long. Was it strictly a money thing while you left, or were there other factors?
Oh, well, you know, I was there for 3 years, and yes, there were other factors, of course. Dana White, who, you know, we have a long history. We used to have a tremendous relationship, and now we have a non-existent relationship. He was never happy. You know, he tried to end the deal before it started. So when he found out that I was going, he raised a whole stink, and credit to ESPN, they never wavered, and they always had my back. As time went on, I think he complained so much about me when in reality, there was nothing that I was doing. Like, you go and look at my coverage in 3 years there, it was all positive promotion, all that stuff. He just has this sort of personal issue with me. And he would always complain, call Jimmy Pitaro, call my boss, et cetera, et cetera. And I think by the end, they were like, golly, you know, like, this is getting tiresome. Like, he really, like, when this guy wants something, he wants something. But again, to their credit, they did offer me a new deal. It was up after 3 years. And I didn't like the environment. I wasn't happy. And I kind of saw, you know, like the writing on the wall. And I just felt like I would be happier if I went elsewhere. But people think that I was let go or fired or anything. Like, no, I had a deal that I thought, you know, it was all right. It wasn't the great, you know, it didn't blow my socks off, but it was all right. And I felt like it would be better off for me to go elsewhere. And it has worked. Like I said, I have no regrets. And also, to their credit, despite the fact that, you know, he would complain and all this stuff, and unfairly, they gave me a ton of opportunities. For example, I got to do sidelines for NBA, and that was just me walking into Tim Corrigan's office. I got to do E60, Outside the Lines, host radio. So it wasn't like they were listening to him and trying. In fact, they gave me more opportunities than I signed up for. It was just by the end, I kind of felt like, all right, it's probably best that I go.
So they made you an offer, but did you feel like they didn't support you in the way that you wanted or needed in the battles with Dana White? Or is that not a factor?
Only to a certain degree. Like, I felt like the major turning point for me was basically Gina Carano, who I've had a great relationship with over the years. She was on The Mandalorian, and she got in trouble for these like posts about, you know, pandemic stuff. And there was a meme kind of comparing it to Nazi Germany. I'm Jewish. I take that stuff very seriously. And I put out a video explaining why this was offensive, but also being very clear, like, I'm not down with cancel culture or anything. Like, I wasn't saying I wanted to get fired. I was just like, hey, this is why there are some people who are upset about this. And
right.
I actually decided not to talk about it initially because I didn't want to get into all of that, but I kept getting hit up about it, and it was MMA and it was Judaism. And so I was like, all right, this seems like it's my, you know, my domain. And the next day, mm-hmm. Dana White came out and called me a douche for that and took a shot at me, and no one at ESPN had my back. And the story like grew over 2-3 days. A lot of my ESPN friends and colleagues came to my defense. And by Sunday night / Monday, it became like a really big thing where I got a couple texts from people saying, like, oh, we're going to comment on it. And the comment, I don't know if you have it, was, I don't have it off the top of my head, was kind of like, you know, it was sort of like a nothing comment. And I was like, all right, this was a very easy thing to squash, and clearly they didn't want to squash it for whatever reason. And so I sort of felt like maybe at that point was the first time that I started, that was February and I left in June. I started to think like, maybe they don't have my back as much as they did at the beginning.
So is he just mad that you made a video explaining why Gina Carano's comments were problematic?
This is like a...
It was a culmination of things.
This is like 6-year feud that we've
okay.
Got
well, that's
going on.
Okay. So that's what I want to ask you because I did do a lot of research in you, and then obviously if you're doing research on Ariel Helwani, there's the feud with Dana White. From what I can gather, in just my research, maybe I didn't go in depth enough. I there was an incident obviously where you spoiled the return of Brock Lesnar, reported it. But outside of
Does Woj spoil, you know, the Knicks right. Re-signing RJ Barrett, or does he report it? So
you did nothing wrong there.
That's
I'm with
the
you
way
on
I
that.
Look at it.
Right, 100%.
Yeah.
But outside of that incident where he claims, you know, you ruined the fun with the Brock Lesnar surprise.
Yeah.
I can't find anything that he has beef with you other than it just seems like he's always just saying you're a weasel or you're the loser.
There's nothing.
Or it's bizarre because I'm looking for like, okay, what happened with these two? What exactly is the beef? And it's just always you're a weasel. And I'm like, I don't get
it. I'll tell you the beef. So he was super kind to me, very accessible to me from the beginning of my career. First time I met him, 2009, up until 2016, where everything kind of blew up. And in retrospect, the worst thing I ever did, and it's easy for me to say now because it was big for my career at the time, but when I went to Fox and like the lines got blurred, I think on their end, never discussed with me, they were like, oh, you know, you can't talk about certain things. Now, let's be clear about what these certain things are. And it shows like where the sport is at compared to the sports that you cover. They would get mad at me. The UFC would get mad when I would talk about free agency, when I would talk about unions, when I would talk about fighter pay. The type of crap that we listen to every single day, that's just right. A part of like, you know, like I listen to podcasts all day. I love that stuff. It was never below the belt. It was never talking about personal stuff, family. Like it was just, but they just want ass kissing coverage.
Right.
And so they would increasingly get mad at me for that, to the point where the final straw was a fighter named Rory McDonald coming on my show in 2016, who just said, I don't like my deal and I'm going to fight out my contract. I'm going to test the market. Lorenzo Fertitta, then the owner of the UFC, got very mad about this. Why is Ariel talking about this? Called Fox and asked them, no, didn't ask them, demanded that they fire me after 5 years. Just because at the time I had two jobs. I was working for Fox and I was working for Vox Media. And with Vox Media, I was completely independent. With Fox, I was a part of the orbit and it got a little bit too, you know, intertwined.
Right.
And
right.
That, well, you know, so it was a buildup.
Yeah, but I'm more fascinated.
There's no smoking gun. There's no,
right.
It was just all me covering the sport as I like how other people cover the sport, but they want more PR, which they can right. get in a lot of places, as opposed to just the guy talking about the good and the bad. And I would argue 95, if not more percent of the stuff that I talk about is the good. This fight, that fighter, this feud, that all stuff sure. that raises awareness for the sport.
Well, again, as someone who's not in the MMA world, I always just assume, thought of, considered you an ally for the sport. I mean, I know that if there's any MMA news, you're breaking it, you're the one doing it. You're an, I mean, it's all positives from my standpoint. I'm not following the minutiae of the day to day of it. But what fascinates me about what you're telling me is not really the UFC, Dana. It's more about Fox and ESPN and having your back. I mean, I guess I'm not shocked that Fox wouldn't have your back because I was there for a little bit and I know how they operate. Yeah. They're terrified of the leagues. And I was told all the time not to write about stuff when I was there, which is part of why it was a huge mistake for me to go there. But, you know, they hire you to cover the MMA, UFC, and then they don't want you to cover it. It's bizarre.
I remember the first conversation I ever had with someone at Fox, an executive, and he sat me down out in LA, and he's like, look, we're going to cover this sport. We're going to do journalism here. And I was like, wow, this is great. I'm Mr. Newhouse. I'm Mr. Syracuse. I love this. It proved not to be the case. They really didn't have my back. Like the way that relationship ended really hurt me because I never felt like they had my, and I never embarrassed them. I never got a story wrong. I never did anything. And it really, I really couldn't believe that they just rolled over. I mean, I got a 2-minute phone call when, you know, they were calling me to tell me that I was gone. That was it. At least at ESPN, like I know ESPN, they were on that's why, like when I was on Le Batard's show last year and people saw me, you know, right after I left and I like went off, people thought I was going off on ESPN. I wasn't. I was going off on the UFC. Right. Honestly, I really, of course, would I have loved to have had, you know, Jimmy Pitaro come to my house and say, you know what, Ariel, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and we're going to pay you like Woj and Schefter because I feel like I'm, you know, I'm hosting this, I'm doing that, I'm doing it. Of course, who wouldn't want that? But at the end of the day, they paid me. They fulfilled the contract. They gave me opportunities that, you know, initially weren't on the deal, like that I wanted, that I asked for. Would it have been nice? Yes. But I really don't hold any animosity. I was afraid that I would hold animosity, to be honest with you. I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to watch NBA and stuff like that. But I'm happy and proud of the time there. And at least I got to do it.
It sounds like ESPN had you back a little more than Fox.
A little more. A lot more.
Yeah, right?
1,000% more.
Yeah.
And you know who had, you know what's an amazing story, just if I could say? I was supposed to work Mayweather-McGregor. You remember that fight, 2017? Mm-hmm. I was supposed to work that show for Showtime. This is a year after I left Fox. And Dana freaked out when he found out because it was a co-promotion with the UFC. And I'm in LA about to kick off the world tour. I've got my suit on. I'm at the hotel right across the street from the Staples Center at the time. And Steven Espinoza, the head of Showtime Sports, calls me and he's like, Ariel, we got to talk. And I was like, uh-oh, this doesn't sound good. He's like, Dana freaked out. I can't do it. It's been a huge nightmare the last 24 hours. I'm so sorry. I never worked a second, a day, a minute, an hour for that guy. And you know what he did? He paid me up front for everything because he felt so bad about that.
Well,
so
he should.
You talk about, you know, he doesn't have to, but you talk like there are executives in this business who have your back, who have a backbone, and there are some who don't. And I really
Fox
can't say anything negative about Fox did not. No, they did not.
Well, when I got the call from Fox that I was laid off, it was 30 seconds and it was on my birthday. So that maybe that'll make it feel a little better.
I never thought I heard a worse story than mine. And that might be it.
Well, your story is where, I mean, mine was like, you know, part of mass layoffs, but I'm not shocked that Fox didn't have you back. I remember when I was there, it was the MLB All-Star game. And it was that one where...
I think we might have coincided. What years were you there?
Let's see. I try to block them out. 2013 to 2016?
Yeah. We were at the same time. I remember when you went over. Yeah. I was there 2012 to 2016.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted you. All-Star game?
No. I probably shouldn't even tell that story.
Okay. You're about to give up the goods?
I know. Let's talk about now. So you leave ESPN, and like I said, and I would assume you agree, this is a good time. If you're going to go out on your own, this is a good time with so many platforms, outlets, and sort of what digital has become. When you turned down the offer from ESPN, did you have a plan in your head of what you were going to do? Did you know how you were going to carve all this out?
That's a great question. Yeah. That's a really good question. So at the time, so now it's February. And I'm kind of feeling like, all right, this isn't happening. And I'll be 100% honest. First, I'm a bit of an anxious person. I'm an anxious Jew. First time in my life, I felt like I needed help. Like I needed to talk to a therapist. I needed to like open the clouds in my mind. And I was actually leaning towards staying, but I was leaning towards staying for all the wrong reasons. I was leaning towards staying just to stick it to the UFC. That was my thing. I'm going to stay. It was going to be like George Costanza, like, you think you're getting rid of me? I'm staying. I'm coming back on Monday, you know? And that's the wrong reasons to stay with a job. So I spoke to someone, and then like slowly but surely, I felt like the clouds were opening. At the time, I had an agent. I decided that I wanted to do things on my own. And I really kind of decided, like, you know what? I could create a puzzle, a pie, if you will, for myself, where I'm doing X for this guy, Y for this guy, Z for that guy. And thank God, you know, I'm a year plus into that. And it worked. All the things came together. No one had issues with each other. So I was talking to someone who works for another network last week, and he's like, man, some way, somehow, you have become like the Switzerland of like sports television. Like, you're on one day this summer, I did a job for HBO and Showtime on the same day.
Right.
Like, no one gets to do that. And
yeah, HBO, Showtime, people, so. the Ringer, Vox, the BT Sport. I will say, one of the reasons I reached out to have Jan, like I said, I've always been sort of fascinated by your career. I am always now coming across your videos on TikTok interviewing the WWE superstars.
Yeah.
And I was like, the guys and gals that you're getting on that, for, I think it's BT Sports, is pretty tremendous. So we'll get into that a little bit, but let me just stick with this. So when you go out on your own, and you have all these, like you said, perfectly put puzzle, because you've got so many, and the MMA Hour, who's behind that?
I did that show from 2009 to 2018, and then I left Vox. I left Vox in 2018. I was there full time. I went to ESPN, and I'll never forget Jim Bankoff, who's still the CEO of Vox. You know Vox, like SB Nation, and Vox.com, all that stuff, The Verge, Polygon. Jim Bankoff, I met with him in person. I was emotional. There was a part of me that felt guilty for leaving, and he said to me, "No problem. Go for your dreams, ESPN. I get it. When they screw this up, and I can assure you they are going to screw this up, you can come back home." And so I called him a year and a half ago, and I was like, "Jim, you were right. I'd like to come back." And so he opened that door for me. But part of the deal was, I'm just going to do this show called the MMA Hour that I do Mondays and Wednesdays for them, but I'd like to do X, Y, and Z for other people. Right. And they were totally down with it.
Because you have the MMA show for The Ringer.
I do the Ringer MMA show for Mr. Simmons and crew, and we do it on Spotify Live, and then there's the podcast. BT Sport is a network in the UK that is kind of, it's a sports network. It's like an ESPN of the UK.
Right.
I actually originally, like, this is back to what I was saying. I reached out to them because the stuff that they do, like, you see some of these interviews, the quality of the stuff that they do, they're the home of WWE, UFC, boxing, Premier League in the UK. And I was like, these guys are doing things so well. And like, they're doing it with such high quality. And who cares that they're in the UK? Everything is digital now anyway. They have a YouTube channel. Like, what do I care that they're in the UK? And when I reached out to them, they were like, I was like, yeah, your stuff is amazing. So that partnership has been awesome, and doing the stuff with WWE. And I was doing stuff with Substack and the Showtime stuff. Now Real Sports. It's been great. No restrictions whatsoever. Like,
well,
exclusive to anyone.
I was going to say, I should have followed up just to put a bow on it. Where's the relationship with Dave? Like, so if there's a UFC fight on Saturday, can you go get a credential, cover it without any issues, or are people busting your balls? Like, how is everything now?
So the last UFC event that I went to in person that I was credentialed for was March of 2020, literally like 3 days before the world shut down. I have not applied for a credential since then. Obviously, for the year and a half afterward, like, ESPN didn't let us go anywhere, right?
Right.
It was actually the last event before I left, June of 2021. They said, you want to go to Glendale for this event? And I said, yes, I was in. And then we realized, like, it went down to the wire, and realized I wasn't going to stay around. They're like, you could stay home. So I haven't been since. I do a post show pod, and I spoke to Simmons about it. It's for The Ringer. And I said, do you want me at the events or do you not? And he's like, I think it's better if you're home, because then you can do it right away.
Bill knows what he's doing, because you really, my opinion is, you don't need to be at the event. You could cover it just as well off TV. Where I would think maybe you would want to be is the press conferences before, because I know those are always wild and there's always
Those have run their course, and I did it. Like, there was a time where the access to the fighters was incredible, and it really made me who I am today. Post-pandemic, that access is no more. Like, you can't get one-on-ones and things like that. It's become a lot more sterilized. So, luckily for me, I have access to the fighters. They come on my show Monday and Wednesday. I don't need to travel to all these places and be there.
So you get the fighters on your show. So there's no resistance from the UFC about that.
Okay. No, there's no, there. Okay. Listen, people ask me all the time, like, what's the status of the relationship? I say it's non-existent.
Well, right. The guy clearly doesn't like you for whatever reason. I'm just saying, like, for shits and giggles, if you wanted to get a credential to the next fight, do you
I think I would. Honestly, like, no one's told, by the way, hand to God, no one has told me you're banned. You know, they tried to ban me in 2016. It lasted 48 hours. It didn't work very well. Now, I would say probably it might be smoother now for them if they tried to do it because I haven't been there for so long. Like, back then, the idea of me not going to an event was a huge deal to the fans because I was at every single one. I was omnipresent. Now, obviously not. But I will say this, like, for all the issues, hey, as long as the fighters come on, and I think the fighters know the value of coming on the show, and I think I'm always fair with my coverage. I don't take pot shots. I don't go below the belt. If the relationship stays like this until I'm 85, I can't complain. I don't need to go. There is no value really for me other than, you know, as you know, like, you cover an event, you're sitting there. As you said, you get a better vantage point on television. The benefit to me always has been to go to the events is the face-to-face time, right?
Right.
You see a manager at the gym. You talk to a fighter at a coffee shop. You run into this guy. Like, that's how I built a lot of my relationships in this sport. You know, I did it for 12 years, and I'm going to other things. Like, I'm going to the Jake Paul Anderson Silva fight coming up. So I'm going to places. It's just not doing the exact same thing that I did for over a decade.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
I know the answer to this. It's a stupid question, but I'll just set it up so you can discuss it. How important is social media for you you're on your own as opposed to being in it? I mean, I looked, obviously you've got, you know, a massive amount of Twitter followers. I saw you have 1.2 million on Instagram. I would assume there's a ton on TikTok where, you know, you got to be
down. I just started TikTok. I'm at 70K on TikTok. Just started a month ago. It's been gigantic for me. I mean, dating back to the beginning of my career, the people that I've met, the people that, you know, you can interact with, it's just huge. But also for, you know, I was one of the early ones to jump on Twitter. I think I've been on since 2008, as far as MMA is concerned. I know it was around before that. And I always use social media, dating back to when I would reach out to fighters. When I first started my own thing, it was called JerryPark.com, the original home of the Montreal Expos, because I'm a huge Expos fan. I couldn't believe that the city of Montreal didn't own the URL. So I rechristened it the Coliseum of Combat Sports. And I would reach out to great fighters like Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz and George St. Pierre via MySpace. And they would write me back because no one was covering the sport back then. So social media, dating back to MySpace all the way till, you know, Twitter and then Instagram and now doing some TikTok stuff, has been great. It can be a little intoxicating and a little much, as you know. But
do you do it all yourself or do you have someone helping you?
So I post everything myself. Depending on who I work for, you know, they make – I'm not good with, like, editing and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, at MMA Fighting, there's a team of people who do it and they, you know, either send me the video or collab with it. But a great story for any young listener out there. A month ago, I was talking on my show and I was like, man, I think I need to get on TikTok, but I don't have the time to do all this stuff. You know, I don't even know how to do it. And I just said, if anyone out there is interested, you know, hit me up. And there's a young man named Spencer who just sent me a video on Twitter. He's like, I heard you were talking about this. I made you this video. What do you think? And all the TikTok stuff is him. Like, he's incredible. And it's just a great example. Like, you just got to put yourself out there and go for it. And I pay him to do this. It's an amazing relationship. I was looking for someone like that. And I think it's been very big for me.
I need a Spencer.
Spencer's tremendous.
Yeah. Now tell me about, so obviously we talked about a little bit of the history with Dana White. In terms of the UFC fan, now, like I said a couple of times, I know if you need UFC news, MMA news, Ariel Helwani is the guy who's going to do it. I'm just curious, this is a morbid negative question, but like, what's your hate like? Is it, you got a lot of hate, a little bit of hate? What's the beef that the haters have with you? Is it just because of the Dana stuff or are there other issues?
No, honestly, okay. No. I mean, I'll get sometimes like, oh boy, you really hate Dana. I've been very blessed. Like, the fans have had my back. Dating back to 2016, I mean, perfect example. They all have, I mean, they revolted. The only reason why I got unbanned was because of the fans. And then every time I would go to the press conferences after, they were chanting my name. I mean, the relationship that I've had with the fans has been surreal to the point where I don't even know like what I did to deserve this. And I think part of it was when I started, I wasn't some like polished TV guy who just showed up and was like, hello, everyone, and with a fake voice and a fake look. Like, I was very raw and I was somewhat awkward and uncomfortable. And I think they realized, A, I was authentic. Like, I really loved the sport. I knew everything about it, but I was trying hard. And I think they had my back for that reason. The only time I get hate on social media, honestly, is if I talk about other non-MMA things. Only, like, they get mad at me, you know, when I say, like, the Bills are going to win the Super Bowl, and then I get a bunch of people saying, like, you're a freaking idiot. Right, that's right. Stupid nonsense. Yeah. I don't take that personally. But as far as the work goes, I never get, you know, you suck, you know. They've really had my back. Of course, there's some here and there. I try not to pay attention to it, but it would be very, very unfair for me to say that I've been mistreated by the fans on social.
I'm glad to hear that. Excellent. There's a running theme on this podcast about people who get annoyed when I talk about wrestling or have wrestlers on for interviews.
Oh,
so now we're going to talk about wrestling. You tell me, because obviously you were into wrestling before UFC, since it was around long. Well, give me like your first moment where you realized you were into wrestling and became like the diehard fan. What was it for you?
So I remember vividly renting WrestleMania 1 from my video store. I remember what the box looked like, Mr. T and Hogan on the ropes. Like, I was obsessed with it. I had all the toys, the LJN toys. I will say one moment that is just ingrained in my soul. First grade, my birthday, everyone at school is talking about a house show at the Montreal Forum that they're all going to. For those who don't know, a house show is like a non-televised event. I felt very left out. I was a big fan. That afternoon, I'm playing in my basement and my mom tells me to come up and all my friends are waiting for me in the kitchen, and they surprised me and my parents took us all to that event. And I loved Bret Hart. Bret Hart was like my favorite. You know, not only my favorite wrestler, like, I think he was like my first favorite athlete, if you will, like the first person I looked up to. And this is pre-championship run. Like, this is him part of the Hart Foundation. And he had a match against Mr. Perfect. And this is probably 90 or 91. And like, him and Perfect back in the day were just magic together. And I'll never forget the finish. We were in the rafters. Like, we were like second to last row. The finish was incredible match. Bret Hart goes on top of Perfect. 1-2, and then the time limit runs out.
Like, the time runs out.
It was amazing. I've never even seen that ever since. And I remember feeling like, what a great, you know, like, it was horrible as a little kid. So, and ever since then, I've been a fan. I will admit, there have been peaks and valleys. There have been times where I've checked out. But right now, I think it's a fascinating time. It's a fascinating time to cover it, and it's a fascinating time to be a fan.
I want to ask you about that, but I have to ask one thing. If you're a huge Bret Hart fan, you're from Montreal, where were you when the screw job happened?
Where was I? I was at the freaking Molson Center. I was there.
You were there.
I was actually there.
So tell me, wait. So when the ref rings the bell after Vince tells him to, Earl Hebner, or is it Dave Hebner? Earl Hebner.
It was Earl,
Vince tells him to, what did you think was going on?
Okay, so this is the thing. This is 1997, right? November of 97. Mid, early 90s, I'm in high school, and this is when I fall in love with the Bills and with the Knicks, right? And you start like, you know, your interest kind of all. So I, that's the period where I kind of checked out. Now I remember being at a driving lesson, like, you know, to get a permit. My good friend Jason Tackman says to me, there's a pay-per-view coming to Montreal Survivor Series in 97, November 97. That was the first ever pay-per-view in Montreal. We never got pay-per-views. So I was like, all right, let's just go. I wasn't following the product for 3-4 years. I go there and all of a sudden it's a different product. Everyone has signs. You know, I'm a 15-year-old kid. I see Sable. I see Sonny. I'm like, what is this? This isn't the wrestling that I grew up. This is incredible. So I'm sitting in the stands, and I know Brett, and I know Sean. I know of the guys, but I had him. You know, the oddities come out with the Cartman dolls. Like, what the hell is this? This is not the same thing that I grew up watching. And then he loses. Bell rings, and then he goes nuts, and he starts smashing all the stuff, and he does the WCW. Yeah. And everyone around us is talking about it. But I was completely oblivious. So I remember going home that night. This is November of 97. Internet is just brand new. And I remember going on all the wrestling websites and reading up. And after that, I was like, holy crap, this is a whole other world than it was in 91 when I was watching, or 92. So I was a little oblivious. That night, I educated myself. And that's the moment, weirdly enough, the moment where my guy got screwed was the moment that got me back in.
Love it. Love it. So I want to ask you about, so I've watched a lot of your interviews with the WWE guys. You did one recently with Rollins, you had Triple H. There's another really good one in there. Rollins, Triple H, there was a third, and now my brain is. Oh, you did MJF. Heyman, of course. I'm curious, because I have those guys on too. I find it thrilling and enjoyable, but also very challenging to interview WWE guys, because they want to go in a certain direction for characters, for storylines. And I want, you know, I don't want Seth Rollins. I want Colby Lopez.
Right.
So tell me how you navigate that and handle that.
Yeah, it's a tricky dance. I want the same.
Yeah.
I've only had one who like truly kayfabe me in a really uncomfortable, unpleasant way. And that was Sasha Banks. I hated that interview. In fact, I told the BT guys, I was like, if you guys don't want to post this, I've never said this. You know, even if it's a crap one, kind of want it up. I was like, I wouldn't hate you guys. They did anyways. They condensed it. But she kayfabe me. And it was like, look, MJF walks into the studio. I hate to tell everyone, like, the dude is a mensch. Like, he's a nice guy. He comes on, you see him doing that, and he goes in and out and all that. It's brilliant. It's a fascinating thing to watch. He does it with a charm. He does it fun. He kind of almost like brings you into the world.
Right.
He is so good at going in and out and talking about the contract, the real stuff, that it's actually great. Heyman, the same.
Heyman, I find to be the most challenging person of all interview.
Really? Oh, Heyman to me is a walk in the park.
Well, he likes to take over. That's, you know. And the last time I had him on, I had written a piece in my daily column. It was like the anniversary of Bobby the Brain Heenan's death.
Oh, yeah.
And I just did like some tribute thing and said, you know, the greatest manager of all time. And then a couple of months later, I have Heyman on the podcast and I introduce him, and he just starts screaming and cursing me out and going off for saying Heenan was the best manager of all time. So I was, you know, then you got to get it back on track. But
that's him giving you respect. That's him giving you respect. Yeah. Like it's to me, I enjoy the challenge of trying to weave through all that. And I would say 95% of the time, like, I feel like I'm getting the real guy. Now, am I getting, you know, a little bit of a magnified version of them? Yeah, sure. But that to me is fun. And I really enjoy trying to present them in that light, right? As you like, I think it's great to do those interviews with them, as opposed to like a worked interview on the broadcast on Raw or something like that. Because I think it shows a different side of them, and it gives the fans like, wow, you get emotionally invested in these characters in a different way, right?
And how are the MMA fighters to interview? Are they challenging?
Oh, amazing.
Is it a challenge at all? Like, you have to work a little hard like WWE, or they're straightforward and it's easy?
No. I would argue, as far as covering a sport, there may not be a better sport to cover than MMA from a journalist perspective, because of the athletes. Like, they don't have handlers. They don't know what cliche answers are. They don't give you stock nonsense. They're so accessible. Like, some dude, you know, like Leon Edwards shocked the world on Saturday, August 20th, and knocked out Kamaru Usman to become the welterweight champion. He was on my show on Monday. I don't know.
Now, are you booking that yourself?
Yeah, I'm a psychopath. In the 13 years that I've done this show, I have never handed it off. I've never asked someone to book a guest for me.
You don't have a booker?
I don't have a booker.
At all. Wow. Me either, but...
exist.
Wow.
I'm averaging like... There was a time where I was averaging like 12 or 13 guests per show. Now I've calmed down and I'm going to like six or so. But it's by far of my life. It's the most stressful part of my life and it's the worst part of my life, booking. Yeah. Because it's not just booking them. It's A, tracking them down, getting them to commit, reminding them, sending them the Zoom link, blah, blah, blah. Then reminding them to come on. Then reminding them the morning. Then making sure they're on time because we're live. It's all live. And right. There's no commercial break. So it's not like this dude's 10 minutes late. Let's go to a commercial and we'll regroup. I have to fill until we can find them.
That's stressful.
I don't know why I do this to myself, but I do.
Yeah. Where is, before we wrap, where is UFC, MMA in terms of still a lot of popularity be gained? Is it
where it's at?
What can take the sport to another level? Where are we at with the MMA's popularity?
I still feel like there's still some room. Obviously, you know, the fight game, as you know, it's cyclical, right? Like there's high moments, you know, Conor McGregor is fighting for the belt and then there's low moments and there's a couple of bad pay-per-views. Then it goes back. It's always going to be like that. Like people like to get all crazy. Like who's the next guy? Who's the this? Who's that? They will always show up. There will always be guys. They'll be from different places. There is now a guy. Let me tell you this, and you can go back to this conversation in a couple of years. There is a guy that they have been searching for years, a true blue, red-blooded American, and they have found this guy. His name is Bo Nickel. Bo Nickel is a 3-time national champion in wrestling from Penn State University, one of the best schools in the country for NCAA wrestling. He has transitioned over to MMA, and the UFC just signed him. He is 3-0. I don't know if they've ever had a fighter quite like him because, first of all, he's like 100% American. Like, he is red-blooded as can be. But he comes over from wrestling, but he's been training for a while. He can strike and he can do jiu-jitsu. Usually you get the wrestlers come over. Like when Brock came over, he had no idea what to do on his feet and on the ground as far as grappling is concerned. This guy has it all. So his fights don't last more than a minute. He is cocky, super cocky, talks really good crap, backs it up, but does it in a sort of like the way I actually spoke to him yesterday on the show. Like he does it in a way where it reminds me of like the number one pick in the NFL draft, a quarterback from Alabama. Like he knows, he's like Joe Burrow. He knows right. He's the man. He backs it up. He's got that it factor, that charisma. The biggest fight that the UFC can make in maybe 2 years is him versus this guy named Khamzat Chimaev, who's from Chechnya, who's an absolute beast, scary mofo. These two guys, USA versus Russia, like this is every promoter's dream.
Right,
and it's
legit.
And they're already talking shit to each other. Like they're already going back and forth. So like anyone who's going to tell you that MMA is dead or cyclical because Conor's not fighting all this nonsense, it's all hogwash. There's always people coming up.
And Bo Nickel's a great name for like promotion, right? memes and all that stuff. Yeah. You could do a lot.
Look this guy
that.
Up when we're done. Yeah. Look him up. His fights, he has not had a fight. He's 3-0 plus two, I think, amateur fights. None of them have lasted more than 60 seconds. And he's dropping guys with his hands, which is unheard of.
Do you have any interest, desire to do interviews with people outside of the combat sports, outside of MMA, WWE, boxing?
So 1,000%. I do that on my YouTube channel. That's another thing that I carved out for myself, where I have an independent channel where I've had people like Rich Eisen and Action Bronson, you know, pre-wrestling stuff. Daniel Ricciardo, the F1 driver, Michelle Beadle, Kenny Mayne, etc. I love sports media, obviously, but you know, I had Brooke Burke on. That was a fun one. Whoops, excuse me.
That's okay.
Did I lose you? I got
excited.
No, I'm there.
You got it. It's all good.
I got excited about Brooke Burke. So I want to be known. I don't know if I'll make it, but I want to be known as the best interviewer in sports. And why not? I want to be known as the best interviewer. Yep. We share a lot in common. I'm a huge Howard fan. I grew up listening to Howard. I think he's the greatest interviewer of my lifetime. And I think I've learned a lot from him. The genius of how he interviews people, the way he breaks them down, he gets them to open up when they don't want to open up and they don't even realize that they're opening up. Like I have studied him. I've listened to him for so long. It's a joy to listen to him work. And so I try to do that with my combat interviews, but slowly but surely, part of the reason why I'm excited to join Real Sports, like I want to show people that I can do non-combat as well. And so, that's 1,000% my goal.
Well, you've said it all.
I've said
that's
it all.
That's my Howard tribute to you.
Yeah.
You do phenomenal interviews. Like I said, I've enjoyed all of the wrestling ones that I've seen. I think you do a great job. Because what I try to do on this podcast, and I think what I like is what you do. I don't want to do question, answer, question, answer, question, answer, question, answer, goodbye. I want it to be a conversation. I want it, you know, I get people give me shit for interrupting. I'm just trying to, like, you know, keep it where we're having a conversation. So, and you do that, which I enjoy a lot. So
the interviews, the shows where I have multiple guests on, I don't write a single question down. I feel like if we're going to the coffee shop, like if we were at a coffee shop right now, we would have a similar conversation, right? Those are right. The best quote unquote interviews. Yeah. Do you want to hit certain things? Do you want to have a roadmap? Sure. But I have always felt like, you know what drives me nuts? When I see some of these sit downs, like I see someone, I don't know, I don't want, like they're on ESPN, they're interviewing LeBron or they're interviewing Donovan Mitchell or they're interviewing Chris Paul. And they're sitting there with a sheet of questions. Like, you can't interview this guy for 10 minutes, really? And you're an NBA reporter, you're an NFL reporter talking to Josh Allen. Like, that's insane to me. So, yeah,
I have a sheet of paper. I just write notes. I don't write questions. Like, I write
different.
What I wrote, Fox ESPN, so I could bring up how you work there. You know, Dana White relationship. I don't write questions. I just, because I want to make, because I'll forget. I have a terrible memory.
Sure,
a bad memory. In just doing this and talking for the first time, it does seem like we have a ton in common. I really appreciate it and enjoyed this. You're a big sports media fan. Whenever you want, if you ever want to come on to talk sports media, you have an open invite. What if you ever want to, you know, chop it up about that? I'm always looking for people to mix it up with in terms of sports media.
I love when you have Orand on. I mean, Richard Deitch back in the day, and I still listen to his pod. And of course, now he's a Canadian as well, or a sort of Canadian adjacent. Yeah. I love all that stuff, all the drama, all, you know, Rachel Nichols is back. Oh, wow. I want to read more about that. Like, I love this stuff. This stuff is, this is like, it's like following a sport in its own right. Right. Like all. And then the crazy thing for me is I made it to ESPN and now I'm on with Scott Van Pelt. Like, I felt like I won some sort of fantasy camp contest. Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm actually going to be on with Jeremy Schapp on E60. This is insane to me. So I feel very lucky.
Well, you do a great job. Everyone who follows MMA UFC, they already know. But if you want to give it, so you got the MMA Hour on YouTube. You've got the Ringer MMA show, Showtime, HBO.
Everything. I'm coming
BT
for
Sports.
More. Yeah.
All over the place.
Ariel Helwani on all social media. And
Ariel Helwani on all. Excellent.
Yeah, post myself.
Ariel, thanks for doing this without power. I appreciate it. You're a sport.
It.
Thank you. Be well.
My pleasure.
All right. Take care.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
All right, joining me now, he was off for a week in the Bay Area for a 40th birthday party festivities, and he has been maligned, beaten, and crushed on Twitter for the last 2 days. I was very worried about him. I had to play psychiatrist last night from WFAN in New York, SNY TV, which started all this trouble. Sal Licata back on the
SI Media podcast. Do you believe all that? Like, we haven't even really discussed it throughout the course of the year. It's been an ongoing theme.
So let me set this up for the listeners. Let me set this up for the listeners. On what was it? Was it May 1st? When did you make this announcement?
Excuse me. May 31st.
Okay, you, so May 31st, 2022, Sal goes on his daily Baseball Night in New York SNY television show and says the NL East is over. The Mets have clinched the NL East on May 31st. How many games up were they at the time?
10.5 games up. Braves are under 500. Scherzer, DeGrom still out. All right.
Yeah. So May 31st, Mets up 10.5 games on the Braves. And Sal says the division is over. The Braves then go on like a 400 win, 20 loss run to close out the season. Basically never lose. It was like 73-23.
They won like 14 straight right after, as the words left my mouth, they won like 14 straight or something.
So then as the Braves catch the Mets, the video of Sal basically becomes porn to every Braves fan. And it's been tweeted and tweeted, and Sal has been beaten
harassed
up.
And harassed.
Harassed on social media by Braves fans wanting him to eat crow. Now I'm torn on this entire thing because you're one of my best friends. I love you. I don't want to see you in pain. But on the flip side, there's no one I know who hates Twitter more. And now you're in the throes of a Twitter disaster.
Well, this has been ongoing the entire year.
Oh, wait, so throughout the year, when the Braves started to close the gap and get within two games, I would get a tweet here and there from someone like, you should ask Sal about this on the pod how's your buddy? And like, I don't give a shit about the sports stuff. Like, I wouldn't tweet about sports. I'm not getting involved. I don't care who says what about it, whatever. And then I got a tweet though over the weekend, I think it was, when the Braves had swept the Mets in Atlanta Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Someone sent me a tweet mentioning you, and I said, well, now that they've caught him, let me see what this is all about. And I went through your mentions, and oh my God, I just could not believe what I saw.
So I think it is an interesting story if I take you to the origin of it. I don't pretend to be a hot take artist. I don't do that crap. What happened was, and I don't even, like, it was just an opinion. I thought the Mets were going to win the division before the year. A producer on that morning, I was coming back off of Memorial Day weekend, so I hadn't been in a while. He knows me. I'm not afraid to say anything, and I'm nuts or whatever. He goes, how would you feel about declaring the NL East over? And my initial thought was, Dave, like, who doesn't think that the NL East is over? Like, I thought it was too obvious to go on and declare like I'm some bold prediction. And then, like, in my mind, I'm thinking that they're going to win the division. I thought they were going to win anyway. The Braves aren't any good this year. They lose Freddie Freeman. They'll be down. The Mets are better. They're only going to get better. So that was my thought process, that it was, like, so obvious. And I never once thought that anybody in Atlanta would ever see it. It was just more about the Mets being good and me believing in the Mets than anything else. So that's how it started. And then immediately after that, the Braves were on the win streak. And then the back and forth. Then I was getting calls from Atlanta Sports Talk Radio to go on, and I did, and there was a back and forth there, and then it played out back and forth all year until its culmination.
Well, I feel like you just dug the hole deeper, because this is for me my takeaway on this. Well, there's two things here. First thing, I don't care who you are, what team you cover, what state you live in, what teams you root for, anything. Take all that out. Nobody should ever say on May 31st that anything is wrapped up when the teams still have to play June, July, August, September. There's 4 months left.
You're thinking logically, like, but that's boring. Who
cares? Well, that's all right. So you're trying to be a little spicy. You wanted to be a little spicy.
I mean, if I think the division is over, if I thought the Mets were going to win the division, they're up 10.5 games. Yeah, have some fun with it and say that it's over. I'm an entertainer. Like, these opinions, we get paid to give opinions. Everybody gives them. You're going to be wrong on certain things,
right,
as long as you believe it. And I believe they were going to, like, I wasn't forcing anything.
I believe you.
Yeah.
Right. So, I believe you. But the flip side of that is,
by the way, you did too. We talked about this, not in that exact way. Like, you believed in the Mets this year that they were going to be legit. I guarantee you.
They still are legit.
Well, right. But I guarantee you the majority of people at that time they were thinking along with me, like, oh, who doesn't think the Mets are going to win the division at this point? 10.5 games up, maybe not in Atlanta.
This is my position on it. I don't think anybody should be thinking about anybody winning any divisions on May 31st. I mean, that's what the, like, for me, I was going to bring this up. I don't understand how after 3 weeks of the NFL season, people talk about MVP races. Can we let this season play out a little bit? Well, how are you on earth? Are you talking? But that's the same thing. May 31st is like the baseball season had just started, basically. There's 4 months left.
Six times in the history of the sport, teams had gone into June 1st with a 10-game lead or more. All six in the history of the sport won the division. It is not something that happens often.
I agree with that.
Like 10 games. They were under 500. You know, it wasn't like the Mets were fraudulently hot and the Braves were good. The Braves were under 500.
Let's get back to you and the beating you're taking. Now, when did you first realize there was this video of you circulating in Atlanta of you making your proclamation?
Well, that's kind of my point, is that when the Braves started their win streak immediately after, that video was blowing up. It was not like it was well over 500,000 almost within the first month or so.
And so some Braves fan must have had it stashed away ready to use.
But they were using it not immediately after, but within that week during the Braves 14-game win streak. Then after I go on with Atlanta Sports Talk Radio, it started to get more. The more the Braves won, the more the video was getting pub. Right. And before this weekend, it was already at over 900,000. Now, this last weekend took it to over a million.
Right, because now I'm seeing all the blogs are writing about you.
Correct. Yeah.
That must be fun for you.
I don't get it. I've seen people say, oh, with one of the worst takes ever. Worst takes ever? That wasn't even my worst take this week. It's just the one that you happened to see. I mean, come on. I don't get it. Like, I insulted all of Atlanta. It wasn't even about that. And I did underestimate how good Atlanta was, clearly. That was my one mistake.
Well, this is what it comes down to. Like you said, you're on TV, you're trying to entertain, you're trying to perform a little bit, and I think that ends up causing the problem with the Brave fan or just the person who wants to see someone humiliated, because in the performing and entertaining, you're aggressive in the take.
Right.
Like if you would have just said, like, listen, let's be honest. The Mets have a 10.5 game lead. They're not going to blow this. We got it wrapped up. But you're yelling and screaming, it's over, and singing and dancing and all that stuff. So that's why people want to see you suffer now. People want to see you suffer.
Okay, so that was and I get that. And I deserve that. That was the next level of it. So after I said it and I was like, what the hell? Like, why are people taking such offense to this? Then I started to get nasty with it. And on the radio, I was singing the song and saying it's over. And after the Mets beat the Braves 4 out of 5, now I'm doubling and tripling down because really I'm in it. I got to dive all in. And I know I'm setting myself up for disaster. And what could go wrong? The Mets, of course. Like, they never hurt me. Meanwhile, people in Atlanta think they hate the Mets. I hate the Mets. They've caused me more pain than anybody. So it was a thing that was building up. And I made it worse, obviously, by having some fun with it and doubling down. And then, of course, they go on and blow the division. But, yeah, it was a back and forth for – by the way, the worst part is not even the Atlanta fans. It's the Met fans who are blaming me for jinxing them. That's what really bothers me.
Yeah, because sports fans are rational. You control the NL East race.
Exactly. I wish I had that much friggin' power. What are you kidding me?
Now, will you attend any Met playoff games?
I still have not decided. I'll tell you this. Now, I bought 4 tickets to every playoff home game, bought the strip, right? We were allowed to access that through SNY. It was a great benefit where I could buy tickets if I wanted to the whole playoffs. You can't buy one game or whatever. You have to buy the whole strip, which is a whole nother issue, laying out that amount of money.
I'm glad you bought 4 because one of those tickets better go to a bodyguard.
Yeah, so immediately after they lost that series, got swept, I'm disgusted. I'm not going to the wild card round. I'm disgusted with them for losing. Wild card's beneath me. But as I've gone on here, I started to, and this is the honest truth, and I texted you about this. I got off the air last night at Baseball Night New York, and I started to feel better. It was therapeutic. I did a spot on radio in Atlanta. They made fun of me, but we had some fun with it. It was respectful. It was good back and forth. Did the show. I'm feeling good. I get a text from my friend sending me some picture of some idiot on Instagram clowning me. And it was at that point I was like, I can't go to these games. Like, I was excited thinking like, maybe I'm going to go. You know what? Maybe I'll go to the wild card game Friday. And then after seeing that, I don't even want
to
deal
with this. At the end of the day, this is all nonsense and bullshit. Go to the game, enjoy yourself. This is nothing important. It's nothing.
Yeah, enjoy myself as they get their rear ends kicked by the Padres or Phillies. Well, that's the other problem. Like the division series, championship series, different story. Wild card, if they lose that, that's humiliating.
Here's the question. When all is said and done now, have you learned any lessons? And if so, what?
Well, the number one thing, and look, I got to be honest with you. Like, my bosses love this stuff.
Oh, yeah, because so, SNY is getting publicity all over the place.
Yeah, and I even heard about it more so from WFAN than anything else. Like, they love it. So I understand, like, it's good, I guess, to get attention. I don't want the attention.
Right.
I want people to leave me the hell alone. I want to do what I do. I know I can do what I do well and entertain, but I don't want this crap. Right. I don't need this aggravation. So the one thing that I would be cautious of moving forward is an opinion like that that is a bit of a stretch. Again, I believe they were going to win the division before the year. I certainly thought they were going to win at 10.5 up. But there's no need to go on and proclaim it over and disrespect the Braves the way that I did that early on. So just be a little more cautious maybe next time.
The price of trying to entertain people.
Yeah, really? Now, the best thing that there is a lot of negative. A lot of people, though, did say thanks for the entertainment. By the way, it was not just fans on Twitter. Atlanta, Steve Gelbs, who covers the Mets for SNY, when he first went down there after this thing, he goes, dude, everywhere I go, people are asking about you. The Braves media also wanted my head on the chopping block down there. All of them. They couldn't. Sal from SNY, SNY Sal Licata, all that.
I don't know this. The MLB playoff scenarios. Is there any way where the Mets and Braves can play each other in the playoffs?
Yes, in the championship series.
So here's what you need to do. If the Mets play the Braves, you need to go to a game in Atlanta.
Oh, get the hell out of here. No way.
That's what you need to do.
My initial plan was to go there for this past weekend, and thank God I didn't. But my initial plan was to go there this weekend.
That would have been.
Wear a t-shirt saying the NL East is home.
You wouldn't have made it out alive on that. Hey, you wouldn't have made it out alive.
Oh my God.
How are you? Are you checking Twitter? What's going on with the Twitter?
No, I mean, I'll check Twitter, but I don't read the comments anymore. Somebody
thank
told
God
me that I
because I read your comments. You don't want to read them.
Yeah, somebody right, and I get friends like, oh, I can't believe what they're saying about you. I'm like, yeah, there's a reason why I block or mute.
It's not what they're saying. It's just I would get annoyed because it's just like one comment after another. It's like, who cares what they say? What are they gonna say? You're an idiot. You don't know what you're doing. Blah,
right.
Blah, blah.
No, you're bald. It's the volume. The overnights. Right. You're a loser. Oh, right. Whatever. Yeah, yeah. I've heard it all. Like, you know, it's not gonna hurt me at this point. But I don't need to see it, so I just have it. My Twitter is set to where I only see now at mentions if it's somebody that I follow or if it's a verified account.
That's all right, there you go. All right, good job. That's good for your mental health.
Yeah, exactly.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
We probably should talk about the playoffs a little bit, but the only thing I have to say about the MLB playoffs, I don't like all these teams in the MLB playoffs. There's too many teams in the playoffs now. Every day,
you will be in
them.
A You won't be in the wild card round when they get four games stacked Friday and Saturday?
I will, and I'll bet them all. Just saying, I'd like it to be a little, I'd like the regular season to mean a little more. That's all I'm saying.
I get it.
We didn't talk about this because you weren't on last week. Rihanna, Super Bowl halftime. Good, bad, how do you feel?
I like Rihanna as an artist. I think the Super Bowl performer is highly overrated. And we're getting to a point where, like, I don't care. And the game itself has become an exhibition, which sucks for you and I, like the real fan. It's about everything other than the game. And unfortunately, that game means the most as far as who's going to win the Super Bowl. So I'm over the whole, ooh, Rihanna's performing. Okay, what? She's going to do half of four songs from her entire library? Like, if I want to see Rihanna in a concert or I want to listen to her, I'll listen to her album. I don't care anymore about the halftime act of the Super Bowl.
I'm with you to a degree. I like the choice of Rihanna, like her music. Fine, good to go. My issue, similar to what you're saying, what I hate about the halftime show is they do 30 seconds of a song. I don't like that. I want a full song, which they can't do. So that's a problem.
It's a mashup.
And she has a massive, massive catalog. So she's going to...
So what hits are you going to see from her? Like, I get it. You know, it's not for you and I. It's for my wife.
Right.
So, oh, who's performing? Rihanna? Oh, let me watch the Super Bowl halftime. That's what it's for. And I'm tired of things being for other people than the people like us who have put everything we have.
That's what the Super Bowl is. That's what the Super Bowl is.
Right, but with everything else too, the streaming bull crap. It's everything is going against what us as sports fans want.
I've made progress with the streaming. This past Thursday, Bengals Dolphins was the first time I had no buffering or streaming issues. Here's what I've noticed, for me at least. If I fire up Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime, on the Amazon app, on the smart TV, buffering issues, pausing issues, all that. If I access it through the Apple TV box, smooth sailing. A little tip out there for if people. This past Thursday with the Dolphins and the Bengals, it's just the fact that I can't flip the channels on the commercials makes me irate. It just makes me irate.
And there's nothing you could do about that, obviously.
I wasn't even going to bring this up, but you just reminded me. The best part of all this, because I've written about it, but now I'll just say it just to get off my... The fact that the Yankees took 20 games and sold them to Amazon Prime, where people have to pay to watch them, and then when the Aaron Judge thing happened, they didn't want the game on Prime. They wanted it on YES. That right there, to me, justifies every word I've said. And makes me 100% right that streaming is not ideal for watching sports.
And it proves the point that they don't give a bleep about the fans. Oh wait, now we care about everybody watching because we don't want to miss this historic moment. But for the other 20 games during the season, screw you. Go figure out a way to watch it because they're going to have a money grab. Bull crap. I'm so sick and tired of it.
It's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. All right, last topic. I probably shouldn't even discuss this, but to me, it's my favorite story of the day when we're taping this. Okay, do you know, let's start with this. Do you know who Lana Rhodes is?
I do not know who that is.
Okay. So she's an adult. Don't Google her. Well, from your phone you can. Don't do it from the home computer. So Lana Rhodes is an adult film star.
Okay.
She tweeted, I don't know when, maybe a year ago or something, or 6 months ago, something cryptic about having a baby with an NBA player.
Okay.
She didn't name the player, but she said, the player was on the Brooklyn Nets or something, or in the tri-state, or maybe in the tri-state area. And the only clue she gave was the birth sign of the player. So everyone on Twitter sort of did detective work and realized that she had to have been talking about Kevin Durant.
Okay.
Some people thought maybe she was talking about Blake Griffin, but a lot of people thought Kevin Durant. Some people thought. Anyway, the reason I bring this up is because I guess over the past day or two, someone spotted her, or I don't know if she posted it, but now there's a picture of her holding the baby.
Okay.
And the baby looks like the identical twin of Blake Griffin. So if you want to have a laugh on Twitter, just search Blake Griffin or search Blake Griffin kid, Blake Griffin, Lana Rhodes. The tweets The tweets are just off the charts, hysterically funny.
And there's no confirmation of whose baby it is?
No, not publicly. But she, it's been a thing on Twitter because she said NBA player but didn't name who. So, of course, everyone on Twitter is trying to be a detective and figure it out. But when you see the picture of her with the baby...
It looks just like
Blake. It's hysterical. You got to see it. It's hysterical. Okay. So everyone should check that out. All right. I'm glad you're back. Next week, the Twitter drama will be less. We can focus on the playoffs. We have to give a best bet, though, before we wrap up. Now, here's some good news. Here's some good news for Sal. Sal has bounced back. Started out 0-2.
Are you 4-0?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so.
Sal started 0-2. He's now 2-2. He had Arizona last week. Easy win over the Raiders, over the
Panthers.
I had Dallas last week. I wanted Arizona, but since Sal took them, I wanted to be different. So I took...
You didn't want
I took Dallas. I should say I'm 5-0 because Arizona, but whatever. 4-0 for me, 2-2 to Sal. What is your pick for week 5?
Do you have one? You could go first this week.
Okay, I have one. I am going back. I said I liked Arizona last week, but I gave him to Sal. I'm going to go against Carolina again with the San Francisco 49ers -6.5 in Carolina. Don't like laying 6.5 on the road. The Panthers are not getting more than 10 points in this game. This should be an easy cover for that Niners defense. Coming off short rest, I don't care about that. Baker Mayfield's been atrocious. McCaffrey banged up. The Panthers are one of the most inept teams in football when it comes to offense. The Niners defense is playing out of their minds. You're laying less than a touchdown, 6.5. I'm going the San Francisco 49ers -6.5 Carolina for my best bet to go, hopefully, 5-0.
So yeah, I like
Can you get over 500?
Yeah. Oh, look at you. Boy, there are a couple that I like here. That line, New England giving 3, does not make any sense based on anything that we've seen this year. I know it's Belichick and the Pats. I know they played hard last week, but Detroit has been pretty good. But because the line doesn't make it, like the line to me is begging you to take Detroit, I'm going to go the other way and take Belichick and the Pats and say that they're not going to go 1-4 to start the year. They're at home. Talent-wise, I don't think that they, or offensively, I don't think they can compete. I know they did well against Green Bay, but that's always what Belichick does anyway, which is why I'm going to take them. I'll go with, in a spot where, I'm not sure, do I like the Giants +8 in London? I'm not going to touch the Jet game. A part of me wants to take the Bucs to blow out the Falcons. They're probably due for a blowout, but Atlanta's been competitive. So I don't really love anything. New Orleans stinks. I'm not looking at that. I'll go New England based on Belichick and say that at home they'll figure out a way to get the win. I have it at -3 here.
Yeah, 3.
I don't love that line. Like I said, right. I think it should be less than that, but I'll take the Patriots -3.
All right. Sal's got Patriots -3. I've got the Niners -6.5. I didn't love the board either this week, so we'll see what happens. All right. Stay safe. Take care. Go Mets. Stay off Twitter. Stay away from Atlanta. All right. Take care.
Talk to you later.
All right. My thanks to Ariel Helwani. Great conversation with him. Sal Licata. Always fun to talk to him for Train of Thoughts. Before we wrap up, quick reminder, recent guests that you need to listen to if you have not listened to the SI Media podcast in the last couple of weeks. Brian Curtis from The Ringer was on last week. Rich Eisen 2 weeks ago. Andrew Marchand 3 weeks ago. Al Michaels 4 weeks ago. Subscribe to the pod. If you're not a subscriber, leave a review on Apple and check out the episodes. And that's it. We'll see you next week. Dan Le Batard scheduled to be on the podcast next week. Hopefully you guys will enjoy that. So check it out. All right. Stay safe. Take care. We'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.